Welcome to Torat Imecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Batya Brander, and today we will be studying Hosea chapter 10. In the last chapter, Hosea focused on the death of children. It was a harsh and difficult chapter. The language was literal and straightforward. In this chapter, we return to the more figurative expressions, using agricultural images to express deep ideas. The first part of this chapter will focus on the transition to Galus. Perek Yud Pasuk Aleph, Gefen Bokek Yisrael, Pri Yeshavelo. Israel is like a vine that has shed its worthy fruit. Kirov Lepiryo, Hirbala Mizbachos, Ketov Laartso, Heitivu Matzevos. The Navi laments, as his fruit increased, he increased his altars. As his land became better, he improved his pillars, where he placed many altars. It's similar to the theme of Kesef Herbesila Vezahav Asula Baal, that we saw previously in chapter 2, that God gave us silver and gold, and instead of using it for good, we used it for worship of the Baal. What is the reference that Israel is like a vine that has shed its worthy fruit? Either it has shed its relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or alternatively, the enemies will come and will shed it of its valuables. Pasuk Beis, verse 2, Chalak libam atay eshamu, hu ya'arof mizbechosam yishoded matzevosam. Their hearts are divided, now they will be punished. He will break their altars, he will destroy their stone pillars. It's an interesting expression, chalak libam ataya ashamu. Now that their hearts are divided, now they will be punished. Contrast this to what we said in Perek Dalet in the fourth chapter, chavor atzavim Ephraim hanachlo. Ephraim was bonded to idolatry, leave him alone, let him be. The sages contrast these two phrases, chalak, divided, ye'ashamu, therefore they're guilty, chavor, united, hanachlo, therefore they're left alone. And from this contrast, the Agada says, gadol hashalom she'afilu Yisrael ovdim avodasara v'shalom b'nehem, ein hasata mekatreg b'nehem. Peace is so great that even if Yisrael is worshipping idols, but there's peace amongst them, then the Satan will not be able to prosecute them. As it says, Chavor atzabim Ephraim hanachlo. V'sanoi hamachlokes, and hated is derision and division. Shene amar chalak libam ataya eshamu. Now the Satan has a place to prosecute. I don't know if I mentioned it in chapter 4, but we see this specifically, acutely in the time of Ahav. If we contrast for a moment the life cycle of Ahav to what was going on during the Shoftim period. So in the Shoftim period, we saw very clearly that the Jews strayed and therefore an army came and oppressed them. Then they cry out to Hashem. Hashem sends them a Navi. The Navi brings them onto the correct path. And as the people do tshuva, they are able to throw off the yoke of their oppressor. Sadly, the Navi dies and the cycle begins again. How then is it possible that in the time of Ahav, where the worst violations of Avodah Zarah occurred, there were very few military failures? In fact, there was quite a bit of military success. The answer lies in the fact that there was tremendous peace between Malchus Yisrael and Malchus Yehuda during that time. They were allied, they were friends. In fact, they made royal shidduchim. Additionally, there was very little Lashon Hara spoken during the time of Ahav. We can deduce this by the fact that Ovadia was successful in hiding 100 Nevi'im in caves. His wife had to purchase food and shop and clothe them. An impossible task to do in secret. And yet, Izebel never found out. A testament to the fact that the neighbors never tattletaled. Contrast this to the time of Hoshea ben Ela, the last king of Malchus Yisrael, who stopped paying tribute to the king of Ashur and additionally reached out to So, the king of Mitzrayim, for support instead. And Assyria does get wind of this. How? People talked. The Assyrian king incarcerates Hoshea ben Ela, exiles all but the Shomron city, lays siege on the city of Shomron for 3 years, and then eventually takes them into exile as well. And all because of chalak libam, the division in their hearts. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. And now that they're in Galus, they confess, Ki ata yomru, ein melech lanu. Now they say, we have no king. Ki lo yarenu es Hashem, because we didn't fear Hashem. V'hamelech ma ya'aseh lanu. And how can the king help us? Finally, a recognition of the past deeds. The Navi continues, reflecting on sins of the mouth. Dibru devarim, alos shav, karos bris. They spoke words. They swore falsely. They made covenants. And so what happened? Ufarach karosh mishpat al talmei sadai. And rush, which is a poisonous weed, maybe hemlock, sprouted with justice in the furrows of the fields. Here justice might be punishment, thus making it red. Like poison weeds, punishment grew in the furrows of the field. Or perhaps the justice here is deviant justice, oppression of the poor, which sprouts like poison weeds everywhere, especially where good things are supposed to happen, in the furrows of the fields. Not surprisingly, the consequence of words or sins of the mouth is poison, which kills by the mouth. Le'eglos beis avin yaguru shechan shemron. The residents of Shomron fear or dread the calves of Beis Aven, which we said are relating to the calves of Beit El, which Yeravan ben Nevat placed there. This is a little cryptic. Why would they fear the golden idols? Ki aval alav amo, for his nation is mourning over it. Uchamarav alav yagilu al kvodo ki gala mimenu. And the priests of the Baal, who used to rejoice over these calves, now they're going to mourn over it. They're going to mourn over its lost glory because it's being exiled and taken away. Since we just mentioned that Shomron was the last city standing in Israel, which was then besieged for 3 years, it stands to reason that Beit El was already evacuated and everything was taken to exile. So perhaps this makes sense that the residents of Shomron have fear and dread because of what happened to the calves of Beit Avon, of Beit El, that they were taken and all of the inhabitants were taken into exile. This theme continues with the next pasuk, Vav, Gam oso la'asher yuval, mincha le'melech yarev. It will be carried to Assyria as a gift for melech yarev, which some say means melech sancherev. Perhaps the Assyrian soldiers took it as a war trophy. Bashna Ephraim yakach. The shame of Ephraim was taken, referring to this golden calf, which ultimately would become a point of shame for Ephraim. V'yevosh Yisrael me'atzaso. Now Israel will be ashamed of all its counsel, had many, many bad ideas, making the calves in the first place, treaties with Assyria. Now they will be embarrassed by all of these bad ideas. Pasuk Zayin, Nidmesh Shomron Malka. Shomron's king has been cut off, again referring to Hoshea ben Ela, who was incarcerated. Kiketzev al pnei mayim, like the foam that rises above the water. Malbim explains that when you boil water, it bubbles and foams at the top, but that's the first to evaporate. It's also interesting because that foam seems to have so much volume, but in fact it's made of so little content. Here they're finally realizing, as we said earlier, that it's not the kings they should rely on, but they should have relied on Hashem. And then the final pasuk of this first unit of the perek, V'nishmadu bamos aven, and the bamos, the high places where they would place the altars that were in Beit Aven, will be destroyed. Chatas Yisrael, they were the essential sin of Yisrael, these altars. Kots v'dardar ya'ale al mizbechosam, thorns and thistles will rise upon their altars, meaning that they will be abandoned because the inhabitants were taken into exile. Va'amru laharim kasunu lukva'os niflu aleinu. This is a cryptic expression. They will say to the mountains, cover me, and to the hills, fall upon me. One idea is maybe they're saying, hide us from our enemies so that we shouldn't be captured. Another, the Radak says, is spare us from a worse fate that would be at the hands of our enemies, so instead just bury us right here. The second section of the parak goes from verse 9 to verse 15. We'll be referring here soon to the sins of Giv'ah. What are the sins of Giv'ah? It's the events surrounding the Pilegesh B'Giv'ah incident, possibly the most harrowing story in Sefer Shoftim. And although this story takes place at the end of Sefer Shoftim, Chazal say that the historical placement should be at the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, during the time of Avsneel ben Kenaz. Additionally, the story of the Pesel Micha, the idol of Micha, took place at the same time. In fact, perhaps right before the story of Pilegesh B'Giv'ah. So let's quickly recap the parts of the story that are relevant to the coming chapter. The mother of Micha, she takes silver to a silversmith and he creates a silver image for her. Micha follows up by creating a whole shrine and worship area with ephods and teraphim to go with it. And this became a gathering place for the local people. Simultaneously, there was an issue going on with Dan, the people of Dan, where they didn't feel like they had enough room for themselves and they wanted to go and conquer a new area. They end up going to the north and conquering an area up there. On their way, they stumble upon this whole shrine that Micha has set up, plus the Levite that Micha found to officiate on his shrine, and they abscond and take the whole operation up with them to the north. And chapter 18 in Sefer Shoftim, the book of Judges, ends with the following psukim. The children of Dan set up for themselves the carved image, and Yonatan, son of Gershon, son of Manasseh, he and his children were priests for the tribe of Dan up until the days the land was exiled. They accepted upon themselves Micha's carved image that he made all the days that the house of God was in Shiloh. And that's how the story ends in Sefer Shoftim. Moving right along in chapter 19, we start with the story of Pelegesh Begiva, the concubine of Giva. There was a Levite man who had a concubine. The concubine ran away from his house and went back to her father's house, and this man decided to go and get her. He stops for too long at his father-in-law's house, and when he's ready to return, ends up finding himself on the road overnight. He stops in the city of Giva, which is a very unwelcoming Jewish town. Sounds a lot like Sodom. Finally, somebody comes and invites him to their home, someone who himself was not from Giva originally, and his neighbors descend upon the house demanding that they send out the Levite, the male guest. The lawless mob wanted to sodomize the guest, and the host tried to protect the guest by offering either his daughter or the concubine to the mass mob. In the end, it's the concubine who gets pushed out of the house. She's abused all night by the people of Giva and dies on their doorstep in the morning. The Levite sends a graphic message to all the various tribes, informing them of this travesty of what occurred. And they get together and demand of Binyamin, Shevet Binyamin, of whom Giva was a city, to hand over the perpetrators. Binyamin refuses. The 10 tribes threaten war. They go to Hashem and ask, who should we send first? And perhaps it was the Urim and Thummim that answered Yehuda. The sages say this was the wrong question. They should have asked, should we go to war? The 11 tribes lose the first battle, and they lose the second battle. Then the third battle, the 11 tribes were victorious over the tribe of Binyamin. But success in a civil war is a complicated thing. In the end, there were only 600 survivors from the tribe of Binyamin. Binyamin was made nearly extinct. And the rest of the story concerns finding Shidduchim for these 600 men so that Binyamin will not die out of the Jewish people. One might ask the question, why did so many people die from the 11 tribes? Why did they lose the first two battles? Wasn't the righteous indignation appropriate? According to Rashi and the Malbim, this is what Pasuk Tes is referring to. Verse 9, Mimei ha-Giv'ah chatas Yisrael. Since the days of Giva you have sinned. Sham Amadu, Lo Tasigemba Giva. It's been long standing. The idol worship has been long standing. And that's why Lo Tasigem, you didn't overtake them in war, referring to the 11 tribes not succeeding the first two times against Shevet Binyamin. Al Bnei Alva, against the children of sin. This pasuk is explaining why the 11 tribes lost the first two battles against Binyamin. Although the battle against Shevet Binyamin was correct and appropriate, but where was the righteous indignation when Pesel Micha was established with a shrine, idol worship, altars, alternative service? Where was their indignation at the desecration of God's honor? In fact, one could say that Yeravam's choice to put an egel in Dan is because there already was a center of idolatry there. And it's the long-standing idolatry that ultimately causes the exile. The Das Mikra understands the next pasuk and psukim to be referring to the impending bondage and enslavement of exile. Hashem says, Ba'avasi ve'esareim. When I want to, I will bind Ephraim. Ve'usfu aleihem amim. And I will gather nations against them. Ba'asram lishtei on osam. When I bind them for the sake of two furrows. The enslavement is compared to a yoked animal who has the plow tied to him so that he can pull it and create furrows. Here the furrows are double, two furrows, because they're going to have a doubly heavy bondage by the hands of Assyria. The Navi continues with the agricultural references. Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11. V'Ephraim Egla Melumada. Ephraim is a heifer in training. While it's still learning what it's supposed to be doing, it receives many lashes. Ohavti ladush. He loves to thresh. But the work animal's job is not to thresh. That's easy. It's to plow. That's the hard work. Pulling a plow is heavy, painful work. There's no immediate gratification, and there's no guarantee of success. In contrast, threshing, there's food everywhere for the cow to munch on. There's immediate gratification. There's something very deep embedded in this metaphor. And though I don't really understand the workings of Avodah Zarah, it seems that somehow worship of these celestial cosmic forces is like reaching low-hanging fruit, quick highs, instead of the deep and meaningful relationships with Hashem that require investment and hard work and a true commitment. I'm going to be corny here and say that this is the line that's been going through my head recently. Sometimes I feel just like that cow who likes to thresh but not to plow. Something about that easy life is just so attractive and appealing. But let's continue with the pasuk, still in Yud Aleph. Va'ani avarti al tuv tzavara. Hashem is saying, and I passed the yoke on the best part of her neck. I was trying to make it easy for her, but it didn't work. Arkiv Ephraim. In the end, Ephraim will be ridden by her enemies. Yacharosh Yehuda, Yisaded lo Yaakov. Yehuda should plow, Yaakov will till or remove the clods, which is easier work than plowing. The end of this pasuk is cryptic, but let's continue. Maybe that will help us understand it. Pasuk Yud Bet, Zeru lachem letzdaka, kitzru lefi chesed. Sow for yourself righteousness or charity. Harvest according to chesed. Niru lachem nir. Break the ground. Ve'es lidroshes Hashem. It's time to seek out Hashem. Ad yavo, until he comes. Ve'yoret tzedek lachem, and rains righteousness on you. Rashi explains that, do you want to know how to prevent Ephraim from being ridden by the enemies? The antidote is plant tzedakah, you'll harvest chesed, and then do it again. Niru lahem nir, start right over again. Don't wait till the last minute. Rashi says if you jump at opportunities to do tzedakah and chesed, then when you need to search Hashem, he will come and he will pour rain on you. Don't wait until you need Hashem and then start doing chesed. But what did you do? Charashtem resha, avlasa kitzartem, achaltem pri chachash, ki vatachte vidarchecha, berov giborecha. You've plowed wickedness, you have reaped iniquity, you've eaten the fruits of falsehood, because you trusted in your own way, in the multitude of your mighty men. And so the result will be, Pasuk Yud Dalet, verse 14, vaka'am sha'on ba'amecha, a tumult will arise amongst your people, v'chol mivtzarecha yushad, Kishod Salmon Base Arvel Biyom Milchama. Your fortresses will be ravaged as Shalman ravaged the house of Arabel, possibly a place, in the day of battle. Aim Albanim Rutasha. Mothers on children were dashed together. Perhaps the mothers jumped on their children to save the children. Some say Shalman is Shalmaneser, the king of Assyria. The chapter ends, Pasuk Tesvav. Kocha Asalachem Basel. Mipnei ra'as ra'aschem, b'shachar nidmo, nidma melech Yisrael. So has Beit El done to you because of your utter wickedness. At daybreak is the king of Israel utterly cut off. Some understand at daybreak, shachar, to be referring to the fact that in Hoshea ben Ela's reign, even at the very beginning, he was a vassal paying tribute, and thus he was really already powerless. And then in the sixth year, he was actually incarcerated, until finally all of the northern kingdom was taken into exile. This chapter is a difficult and painful chapter. It reminds us of the importance of unity, the importance of our word, and the dire consequences of disunity. It reminds us of the importance of standing up for the honor of God, as the people failed to do in the time of the Pesel Micha, the graven image at Micha. The parak reminds us to be consistent in our defense of God's honor. Like the twin books of Rebbetzin Youngreis, The Committed Life and The Committed Marriage, real relationships require commitment and consistency. And don't just enjoy the pleasure of the low-hanging fruit. Thank you for learning Le'ilui Nishmat's Gilbert Carcenti, Menachem Mendel Ben Sa'ud.